playing. What have you done now?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Brad Gilmore Show. On demand. How's everybody doing today? Hope y'all are having a good day, as good as possible. It's good to be back here on the show. There are a lot of things I want to talk about today. I'm actually recording this Monday, October the 2nd, 2017. And, I guess I should start the show off like this. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the tragic occurrence that happened in Las Vegas, Nevada, you know, late last night, early this morning, when I'm doing this. You know, wild gunman, you know, 64 years of age, you know, y'all know what happened. You know, I don't want to, talk about it too much, but, you know, I mean, he opened fire on a sea of people at a country music concert and, ended up, you know, ending a lot of people's lives and injuring a lot of people and hurting a lot of families and a lot of great people and a lot of great Americans, I'm sure. And I just want to say this about, you know, obviously my thoughts and prayers are with all the families and all the victims of this horrific, horrific incident. But I think what I need to say more than anything is a lot of the times when there are incidents like this in this country, we take it as a time to politicize and to get our point of view across. And I just want to make sure everybody out there, at least for the next few days, let's put ourselves in the family and the victim's shoes. And let's not use this as an opportunity to, you know, further our political ideology, you know, or double down on any kind of anything right now, because right now we need time to process what happened. This is the worst massacre, domestic massacre in the United States history. And I think we need to realize that. And there are a lot of different reasons this could have happened. You know, they're still investigating this and new information comes out every second. You know, by the time many of you hear this, we might know the motives. We might know everything. But I think more than anything, we just need to take this time to remember that we're all, you know, we're all Americans, we're all citizens, we're all neighbors, and we don't want to see this senseless crime or this senseless action happen to anybody, and we just need to, we really need to put ourselves in the position of the victims and the families and just, and give this time to them, focus our attention on them. And not make this a political issue. I know it's hard in the climate that we're living in. Trust me, I understand. But right now, let's grieve with the victims of the families, with the victims and the families, because I think all of our hearts hurt. It's really easy to become desensitized to as many of these as it feels like happen. And, you know, and we're just like, oh, another shooting. You know, but we have to really remember that, you know, these are real people who were just trying to have a good night and a senseless tragedy happened to them. And I just want to make sure we give them our full undivided attention, our full love and support, and show them that we are here for them for the long haul. And that's all I just want to say. I just want to say that in my love and prayers, you know, go out to the entire state of Nevada, the entire city of Las Vegas. It's really strange. And, you know, I tweeted this out earlier today. I had a dream that my girlfriend and I were going to go to Los Angeles. And last second, I said, you know what? Why don't we go to Las Vegas? And I remember it looked awesome in my dream. And then I woke up to the nightmare that was. And once again, my thoughts and prayers with everybody who was affected. And I think the entire population of this great country was affected by it. And let's use this as a time to come together and unite against any evil that tries to interrupt our daily lives. Let's just remember that. And let's remember that we're here for them. and we're going to get through it. We always do, because we're Americans. And above all else, we're people. And we feel for everybody out there. So I want to move off that. You know, I just wanted to kind of, you know, talk off the top of the head and just really get my point across. And I hope I did. I hope I didn't ramble too much. You know, I'm in this public speaking class right now, believe it or not. And we did our first speech, and I got my grade back. You know what? It's right here. Hold on. I got my grade back, and I got a 98, which most of you said, you know, that'd be great. That's great. But you know, there's the notes that the professor gave me. I'm like, okay, a 98. I guess that's not bad. You know, I can take a 98. But then I read his comments, and it says your intro can ramble, and then later on it says you can ramble in places. So I guess I need to work on my rambling, and I'm sorry if I tend to do that. But anyway, we have a good show for you today. I want to talk about a variety of issues. First off, I want to address, if y'all haven't checked it out right now, it's streaming right now, the entire season, Back to the Future, the podcast, season 4, in full effect, in full swing. And we had a lot of amazing guests. We had Harry Waters Jr., who played Marvin Berry, who sang Earth Angel, Earth Angel. He sang that in Back to the Future and Back to the Future Part 2. He was on the show. We had AJ LoCascio, who portrayed Marty McFly in the video game, Back to the Future video game. We had Jeffrey Weissman back on the show, who played George McFly in 2 and 3. And then we had Stephen Clark, who was an awesome, awesome interview. Stephen Clark runs backtothefuture.com. We had a two-parter with him. And then we had Nick and Scott from Back to the Future Minute. Awesome season. Go check it out. It's streaming now. You can get everything. Every single episode is up right now at backtothefuturepod.com. That's backtothefuturepod.com. And guess what? I've already started planning season 5, baby. It's right around the corner as we speak. So a lot of good stuff there. I'm just trying to get some plugs out of the way. Also, Brad Gilmore Show will be back on a weekly basis. A lot of stuff has been going on. I've been doing a lot of traveling, a lot of planning. Harvey came, kind of threw a monkey in the wrench in a lot of ways. But Brad Gilmore Show will be back on a weekly basis. I'm actually working right now. I'm building like a set in my office at my home. And I hope that it turns out like I want it. And I'm going to try to start doing a little more video and to accompany the audio. So we're going to see how that works out. It might be awful. It might not be. But, you know, I got to try something, guys. I've been doing this podcast and stuff for too long. It's time to try something a little different and maybe get some more video. Y'all want to see my face, right? Y'all want to see my beautiful face. So that's also coming down the pipeline. Okay, pipeline. All right, now, let's get into the topics at hand. First off, I got to tell you, I had an awesome, awesome trip to Los Angeles, California, a couple weeks ago. Booker T and I and the lovely Queen Charmel, we went down there to do a live event, Booker T Live in Hollywood, from Lucky Strike Live there in Hollywood, California. And we went down there, did a live podcast, had an awesome, awesome lineup of guests. We had Corey Graves, Kurt Angle, Gold Dust. We had Eli Drake from the TNA champion, the Global Force Wrestling champion, the Impact champion, whatever it's called right now. We had him. We had Rob Van Dam and a surprise guest of Mr. David Arquette. David Arquette, the former WCW champion, the former husband of Courtney Cox. He came on and we did a couple minutes of him with him. We talked about Ready to Rumble and a host of other things. So a lot of awesome things that we had. And that audio, you can hear the full show. It was edited down for some particular reasons, but you can hear the full show right now on radio.com. Just search Booker T or go to iTunes, Heated Conversations with Booker T and Brad Gilmore. You can find that show there. You can listen to it. It was an awesome night, and we're actually planning on doing more of these. We want to do more live shows. We had so much fun over there in Los Angeles, California, in La La Land, that we want to do more of them. And hey, why the hell not? But it was really cool. You know, we raised a lot of money, and we did, the live show. All the money from the live show went to Hurricane Harvey victims. More in particular, the kids who were affected, with their school. You know, if they lost their backpacks, they lost their school shoes, their school supplies, textbooks, uniforms, whatever. We try to get as much money for them to buy some uniforms for these kids. And so all the money went there, and we also had an auction at BookerTauction.com. Man, that thing turned out amazingly. I mean, amazing. We had We had stuff from Roman Reigns, Bray Wyatt, Rob Van Dam, Eli Drake, Elias, Charmel, Mick Foley, Booker T, Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy, Enzo Amore. I mean, all these guys just donated these items to us. And, you know, I don't think we have the final tally on everything, but I think when it's all said and done, we're going to be probably close, if not over $20,000 we're going to donate with just in a couple weeks of some fundraising efforts. So I really am proud to have been a part of that and help organize those events. I got to shout out a couple of people. I got to shout out Travis over there at Lucky Strike. Got to shout out Chuck Rice for helping us out. I got to shout out all the people in LA from the Schmodown, from the Schmoes Know, who showed up and helped retweet and get the word out. And X-Pac was another guy who's retweeting all the time. Sean Waltman, X-Pac, he was retweeting all the stuff. So I got to give a big shout out to everybody who helped make that event possible and who donated and also bid on these auctions. If anybody out there is a Brad Gilmore Show fan, you bid on one of these auctions, just, you know, my heart goes out to you because you're helping, you know, these kids who lost everything. Most of them lost everything, especially in the Friendswood area. You know, there's about a half mile between Booker and I's houses. And my house was okay. His house was okay. Everybody else lost everything. So it was a very, very tough situation that we went through here in Friendswood, Texas. So thank you for everybody who came out and did that. I mean, it was really an awesome day because so earlier in the day, Reality of Wrestling, you know, we officially went worldwide, went national on Fight TV. Fight TV is the number one streaming combat sports network. You know, it's kind of like all the best parts of WWE Network and like UFC Fight Pass in one. And you get UFC pay-per-views on there. You can get the biggest boxing matches, like Canelo Triple G was on there. And you can get a lot of good wrestling, including the Reality of Wrestling, Ring of Honor, GFW. We're all on Fight TV. And it's awesome because since our debut on Fight TV last Sunday, we've been trending on Fight for the last 2 weeks, and our episodes are always in the trending searches on Fight TV. So we really want to shout out to the Ro Nation, and now the Ro Nation is Ro Global. We're worldwide now, and you know, it's just an awesome thing to have your product, something that I've worked now on five years with Booker on the show, on this project, and I've taken on more roles over the years, and it's just awesome to see something you worked on and are working on currently, you know, just kind of accepted by everybody. And people say, man, I really dig this show. I really like what y'all are doing. And it's just cool. It's cool to have the fans interact. You know, there's a live chat there. Just really an awesome, awesome experience to go through. So shout out to everybody watching us on Fight TV. But, you know, that's how the day started. The day started in LA, Fight TV, Reality Wrestling went on. I walked across the street to this awesome Mexican restaurant called the Border Grill. We went over to the Border Grill with my man Stockzilla. We ate, we had some lunch. We rode around. He played me some of his new jams. And then later on, boom, dropped me off at the hotel. I got suited and booted. I got ready. I got ready to rock and row. And I got up out that hoe. And I went and met Queen Charmel at her hotel. And then we walked down to the Staples Center, saw WWE No Mercy live and in person with two WrestleMania caliber matches. We saw Brock Lesnar, Braun Strowman for the Universal Championship. And we also saw John Cena versus Roman Reigns to see whose WWE is it, as Booker T so eloquently put on an episode of Monday Night Raw. And we saw that it was Roman Reigns' time. Roman Reigns is the guy right now. And, you know, his merchandise, you know, so Roman Reigns gets booed everywhere he goes. Everywhere he goes, he gets booed. But it's awesome because he gets booed. People say they hate him online. Oh, my God, I can't stand Roman Reigns. He's being shoved down our throats. He's a carbon corporate copy of John Cena. You know, he's just John Cena 2.0, whatever you want to say. And, you know, everyone talks all this smack about Roman Reigns. And then when it comes time to bid on these auctions for, you know, the Hurricane Harvey relief, guess who had the highest selling item? Roman Reigns, and it wasn't even close. Wasn't even close. Bray Wyatt's WrestleMania glove that he wore in his match against The Undertaker didn't even hold a candle to Roman Reigns' gloves that he wore on an episode of Monday Night Raw. So Roman Reigns is absolutely the guy. And if you think that he's not, you're sorely mistaken. Because he's actually taken over as the WWE and I think that his program with John Cena in many ways helped solidify him in his position he is currently, because, you know, that first program, that first promo series, that promo battle that he had with Roman Reigns, or that Roman Reigns had with John Cena, Roman didn't look so good. Like, I think he forgot his lines. He kind of stumbled over a lot of stuff, and he ended up, like, through that whole series, finally starting to find his footing, you know, on the microphone. And I thought that last promo that he did against John Cena, where he's talking about, you know, John Cena, you know, you're exactly what you said you would never be. You know, you criticized my cousin, The Rock, you know, for leaving us for Hollywood. And you said you would never do that. John Cena would never leave you for Hollywood. And guess what he did? He left us for Hollywood. And now John Cena's legit part-timer. You know, something I never thought I'd see, the day where John Cena's starting to wind down his wrestling career. But it's happening. And it's happening every week. You know, every day, every month, we're seeing less and less of John Cena. And you know what? I think, though, it's the right time. Let John Cena fill another role and let Roman Reigns assume the role that he, you know, has been put in that position for the last few years. He's been put in the position to be the guy. Now he has the opportunity to be the guy like he's proclaimed he is for so long. And I think it's only good for WWE. It's only good for Roman Reigns. And I think the crowd will eventually come around. It might have taken them 17 years or 15 years to get behind John Cena, but they finally did. I mean, I was there. I was there at the Staples Center. I heard the massive amount of cheers for John Cena in live and in person. You know, and I know people were probably on Twitter that night. Oh, no, John Cena didn't even get a reaction. You know, everyone hated the match. But no, that wasn't the case at all. The people were super into the match. And I think aside from that tag team match, it was the match of the night. You know, I really enjoyed Roman and Cena. I thought that the match was what it needed to be. It needed to be a passing of the torch. You know, it needed to be that Hulk Hogan Ultimate Warrior style match, you know, but better, you know, actually passing the torch off. And I think John Cena is that kind of guy who once he gives you the ball, he's going to let you run with it. And he's not going to get in your way unless he's asked to. Now, Vince could always come back and say, oh, John, you know, God damn it, John, we need you. We need you, John. God damn it. But I think that it's safe to say Roman Reigns is going to be the guy for the time being. So we leave the show. We go back to the artist entrance to the venue. And, you know, we actually run into Sherry Shepherd. Sherry Shepherd was so cool too. Sherry Shepherd was a G. I've always liked Sherry Shepherd. I was always a Sherry Shepherd guy instead of a Star Jones. I always thought Star Jones was kind of a big B.I., if you know what I mean. And Sherry Shepherd just seems cool, man. She just seems real cool and down to earth. And she did when we met her. And, you know, Charmel goes, hey, Sherry. She goes, hey, girl. Like she said the exact thing that I wanted Sherry Shepherd to say at that exact time. But anyway, and then, we get in the car, we go over to L.A., Booker and I talk over the show, get to Hollywood. And, God, it was just an awesome night. You know, David Arquette he just showed up. Nelly was there. Nelly, the rapper Nelly, was just bowling. Happened to be bowling there. How awesome is that? So, safe to say, we had a really cool and entertaining night for all the fans. And like I said, you can go listen to it on radio.com or go to iTunes, download the Fight TV app, but go to iTunes and listen to Heated Conversations. But it was an awesome trip in L.A. I'm glad I'm back. I'm going to keep y'all posted on any future dates we may have a live show. We got to have one here in Houston sooner than later. So expect that coming very, very quickly. But anyway, what I wanted to do today on the show is yesterday was the 1st of October. And for those of you who know me, know that there are a few people who are really instrumental in a lot of my interest and, my idols when it comes to entertainment. And one of them is Johnny Carson. Now, a lot of people now are it's crazy to think, you know, I'm too young to know Johnny Carson, but I love Johnny Carson. I thought he was the greatest, you know, host of all time. He hosted The Tonight Show for 30 years from 1962 to 1992. And Johnny Carson was phenomenal, man. He was just awesome. He was everything you wanted an entertainer. He was a good-looking guy. He was quick-witted, sharp, dressed nice, Everyone liked him. He'd play the straight man when he needed to. He'd play the goof when he needed to. And, you know, he was my favorite entertainer of all time. And yesterday was the first, and it would have been the 55-year anniversary since Johnny Carson's first Tonight Show. And in celebration of that, and here's the thing. I'm not just like a passing Johnny Carson fan. I'm a massive Johnny Carson fan. You know, there's a Johnny Carson picture, autographed picture in my office. There's a I have Johnny Carson pictures everywhere. I got DVDs of Johnny Carson's old Tonight shows. I got the highlight reels of Johnny Carson. I've actually worked with Carson Entertainment Group on a couple of things in the past couple of years. I love Johnny Carson. Just to put it bluntly, I love Johnny Carson. And so I want to my cat is named Carson because of Johnny Carson. That's a true story. So I love Johnny Carson. So what I wanted to do is that I actually did an interview on an old podcast of mine, Your Opinion Doesn't Matter, with Matt Topolsky. We had on a guy named Mark Malkoff, and Mark Malkoff is a really cool guy. He is actually the host of the Carson podcast. It's a podcast dedicated to Johnny Carson, and they go in and they he interviews people who are on the Johnny Carson Tonight Show, and you know, they talk about all the things that, you know, they experienced there with Johnny and more than that. And so Mark Malkoff came on the podcast. And, you know, I've never played the interview here, so I want to play that interview in celebration of Johnny Carson's 55-year anniversary. Now, even if you're not a late-night show fan, or even if you are, if you're not a Johnny Carson fan, but you love Stephen Colbert, you love Jimmy Fallon, you love Jimmy Kimmel, you love James Corden, they all got everything they have. I mean, Letterman, Leno, they all got at least a piece of what they have, I should say, from the things Johnny Carson did. On the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. He was the best entertainer, and everybody stole all their stuff from him. So I want to take this opportunity to play that interview with Mark Malkoff here on the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. Really fun stuff. Y'all stay tuned. Please stay tuned, because you'll learn something. If you like anything about late night, it's a really fun interview. So y'all check it out. Here he is, Mark Malkoff. As I mentioned earlier, here he is, Mark Malkoff, host of the Carson Podcast. How you doing today, Mark?
Doing great. Thanks, Brad.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. I have a myriad of topics I want to discuss with you, but let's just start it right now. I recently was on the phone with a man named Dave, who works over at the Carson Entertainment Group, and we were talking back and forth, and he mentioned the Carson Podcast. And me, who I'm a lifelong Carson fan, had no idea of the existence of the podcast at this time that he gave me. He bequeathed this information to me. So I found out about it. I instantly binged, listened to almost every episode that I could get my hands on. And I'm a huge fan. Absolutely love it. Talk to me a little bit about the creation of the Carson Podcast.
Oh, you're so nice. But thank you for your kind words. I knew I wanted to do a podcast, some interview sort of podcast, but I wasn't sure if I wanted it to be broad, just entertainment. And then I sat down with Peter Jones, who did the Johnny Carson American Masters documentary. And I definitely was a huge Carson admirer. I knew a lot about Carson, but there was such a lack of information for a guy that Steve Martin dubbed probably the most famous man in America. There wasn't a lot of information about him. So I sat down with Peter Jones. I interviewed him in his office in Los Angeles. And the interview was just going to be for a general podcast that I was going to do. And after interviewing Peter, I told him I had this idea, this vague thought that since I'm so curious about Carson and Peter Jones's documentary, which is amazing, but it was like 2 hours, and I wanted more. And I shared with Peter this idea of a Johnny Carson podcast. And Peter said, you need to do this. You should do it. Tell everybody I endorse you. Because he could just sense through the interview, and it's one of the best episodes, Peter Jones. He could just sense my enthusiasm and my knowledge, and he supported what I was out to do, and he's just been wonderful. Him and Jeff Sotsuk from Carson Entertainment have both been tremendous. So that's how the podcast began.
Wow. I mean, you know, definitely a nice guy to get a co-sign from when you're trying to start a podcast is the guy who did that incredible, incredible documentary, which if no one's out there has seen it yet, you got to go check it out. But, you know, to me, when I tell people I'm a Carson fan, they're a little taken aback because I was actually born 6 months after Carson went off the air.
So, I mean, yeah. I had to discover Carson later in life. And, you know, I remember, I think it was my grandparents bought me that 3-disc Carson set that had moments from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And I, you know, mm-hmm. I didn't know who he was, watched it. And you see those classic moments like with Ed Ames or with George Gobel and, you know, all the, you know, just classic, classic moments. And instantly, I found an idol, an icon, a hero in Johnny Carson. And, you know, I think just the fact of everything about him was just so cool. He was so suave, debonair, down to how he dressed. And then his timing was impeccable. But what was it about Carson that you loved so much?
There's a lot of things. One, he was likable. He could sit down with an A-list movie star, a child, what they would call civilians, which were just people a lot of, that have never been even out of their hometowns. And he could just sit down with all of them, make them feel comfortable, make them look good, and get them just to forget that millions of people were watching at home and in the studio audience, and just create these real moments, real genuine moments. He was the funniest guy. At the same time, he was very smart and curious, and he would get people like Carl Sagan, who necessarily wouldn't get huge ratings, but he would have these people on just for him. And just such a smart, a lot of people said the most well-read person, man, that they ever knew. And to me, the big fascination was that he was able for 30 years to not have any serious competition. The only other person I can think of figure that has been able to do the same in network television without any serious competition for more than, you know, three decades is Lorne Michaels with Saturday Night Live. No serious competition to their show either. So, but Carson obviously was nightly, five nights a week, and then he started having guest hosts. But no one ever came close to dethroning him.
You know, I mean, you know, they talked a little bit about Arsenio came close, but I really just think that was two different completely worlds that those shows were really operating under. I really don't think there was a lot of crossover, in my personal opinion, when I kind of look back at it. But when you talk about Carson, you talk about your Carson podcast, I mean, instantly I'm looking through the names of the people you've had on there. And you talk about Jeff Sotzig, who is, of course, Johnny's nephew and producer, which was a great interview. And I loved when he revealed how the whole cast ended up finding out that he was Johnny's nephew, you know, with the Thanksgiving, yeah, see you later. I mean, the stories that you had were incredible with Regis Philbin, Larry King. Have you kind of surprised yourself with some of the people you've been able to get on the podcast to talk about Johnny?
I will say this. So my expectations, I always try to think big. I really do. But my expectations with Carson for this podcast, I really wasn't sure. I hoped for the best, but I wasn't sure if anybody would talk. There were a lot of people that were very private about talking about Johnny. It was definitely in the beginning, I wasn't sure. And then I just started getting phone calls and emails from people that I just could not believe were getting in touch with me. I got Stephen Wright a message, and with 45 minutes, I got a phone call, and it was Stephen Wright. And I was floored. And I mean, I know why he called me. It's only because it was Johnny Carson. If it was anything else, Stephen Wright even told me normally when he does these things, which aren't a lot, they take sometimes months to set up. And I said to him, I was like, so Mr. Said Stephen, you know, so I'll come up to Massachusetts and record with you. I said, Mark, you don't understand. I happen to be in New York. I'm in Washington Square Park. I just got your message. I can only record in 3 hours. So within 3 hours, I'm sitting down with Stephen Wright, who, you know, his life changed by going on this show, and he got very emotional talking about it. And, a lot of that type of stuff with people that were my dream guests have happened. And I feel very fortunate to sit down with these people.
Well, you talk about having to interview Stephen Wright with 3 hours notice. I think Regis Philbin was another one where you knew, like, I think literally like the day of.
It's true. That's true.
And,
yeah.
And you, but you have like a considerable amount of research that you do with everybody, you know. I mean, I don't know if it's you doing research or you're just like this encyclopedia of television history from those eras, but you seem to have these stories and these facts that I'm not even aware of, but, you know, you have them as an interviewer. And so your research, how do you research for someone like Stephen Wright or Regis Philbin with literally hours notice? Do you just go in there and say, I'm just going to wing it off the knowledge that I have, or do you try to do a cram session?
And well, with Stephen Wright and Regis, I had to wing it. And luckily I knew a decent amount, but I would have loved to have an extra day or at least a few more hours to prep. But there's definitely people like Bob Saget who You know, I said to Saget, I said, Bob, do you know the first time your name was ever mentioned on The Tonight Show? And his jaw just kind of dropped because he didn't know. And the Carson stuff, his Carson appearances going on that show was just such a huge deal for him. So I said, do you know the first time your name was mentioned? He had no idea. And I said, your first time on The Tonight Show, your name was mentioned, was by Richard Pryor. And you should have seen that Bob Saget's face. He just couldn't believe it. He said, I did a movie with Richard Pryor. And I said, he was plugging the movie and he mentioned you by name. And, so I like going in tight with lots of information if I can, and then just kind of being flexible. And if one of my guests goes in a different direction, I'll go with them. But I like to do the prep. I mean, sometimes an hour or two, sometimes more, but, at the same time, you're right. Sometimes I have no time. People are like, I can only do it in 2 hours, and I do my best.
Well, you know, judging by, you know, the quality of the podcast, you're doing very well, even when you wing it. But, you know, you talk about Carson and, you know, to me, like I said, an idol, an icon. But, you know, he said goodbye in 92, with those memorable last run of shows. And then, on his last episode, he does not, it's always, you know, famous. You hear about it, you know, and especially if you read the Bill Carter books, which I'm sure you've read.
Sure.
When, you know, you hear that Johnny didn't say anything about Jay didn't acknowledge Johnny on his first night, of course.
Yeah.
What was your thought process of that whole late night transition when Johnny decided to go and retire? Then there was the battle between Jay and Dave. What were your thoughts going on?
I think Johnny was smart enough to recognize the landscape and was changing. I think it was really hard for Johnny, from what I've heard from various people, that those Dana Carvey Saturday Night Live sketches, which Dana Carvey did not write, but he was in them. And I think that Johnny, Dana Carvey just did an interview saying that Jay Leno told him that he saw Johnny walk in the hallway saying, if they're going to make fun of me, it's time to retire, time to get out. And I just think that he never wanted to be, he said, you know, later, he never wanted to be Bob Hope, or even his idol Jack Benny thought people stuck around too long. And I think he recognized that the landscape was changing. Everyone, all these people were getting their own show, and he wanted to go out on top. So he left. And then, you know, from what I've heard, that, you know, Johnny really wanted Dave to be the guy. But of course, you know, it was NBC's decision. And from a pure monologue standpoint, I do understand from a monologue standpoint, Jay he really did have a strong track record in terms of the monologue. So they went with him. And, you know, Tom Dreesen said this, and this is probably true. He's convinced the reason why they went with Jay was because he would be easier to control. Jay is a very, you know, trying to please his bosses. And Dave is just, you know, he's a little bit harder, apparently, to work with. So they went with Jay. And then, yeah, I was watching, you know, Jay's show, and it was interesting the first year or two, because he was basically, in my opinion, essentially doing Johnny's show. He was in Studio One, the same studio. The whole structure of the show was exactly the same. The desk was in the same place, backdrop. He started doing characters. I don't think a lot of people remember this, but he started doing these characters. You know, Johnny had Karnak, of course, and Jay was doing, you know, Iron Jay and all these sketch characters that I think people forget. To me, he was doing Johnny's show for the first maybe year and a half, and then he went to Studio 8H for a week of shows in New York, and I was there for one of them. I think it was in 93 or 94, and they had the thrust stage with the crowd really close to Jay. And I think that was the show started to change in terms of, they went back to Burbank and they moved out of Studio One across the hall to Studio Three, the thrust stage. And Jay really started making the show his own. And I know they all say that Hugh Grant, that episode was the one that set the show over the edge, but it's not true, in my opinion. And I think anybody that has a firm knowledge of all this, the tide was changing anyway. It wasn't the Hugh Grant thing. It's just it's folklore. It's like the people that say Dave Letterman bombed at the Oscars, which it wasn't true. He got actually a lot of good reviews, and he did great. The only reason people think Dave bombed at the Oscars is because Dave over and over again said he ruined the Oscars. If people hear something enough, a lot of times they believe it, and it's folklore. It really, really is. And then Dave, the first year and a half at CBS or whatever, 2 years, was doing amazing. I mean, he was number one in the ratings, and it just, from what I've heard, what I've read, is he just, Dave was just having a hard time keeping up the momentum because he, you know, Johnny would stroll into Burbank at 1:30, 2 o'clock. He'd be done at 7:00, and Dave was just doing all these remotes and pre-tapes. And it was just, I just think it got to be so much work. And then Jay started taking over, and I think that Dave kept fighting and doing this hard, working as hard as he could for the longest time. And I don't know. I mean, just Jay's whole philosophy, I believe, is if you're number one, you have the best show. And I think Kimmel feels differently. I feel Dave thinks differently. And I think a lot of people in the public feel differently. I respect both men for different reasons. I mean, Jay, you have to give him credit. He was number one. His work ethic, if you talk to his staff, very nice. I've talked to him before, very nice man. So, yeah, I mean, I think, and Dave to me is just a comedic genius, and he has influenced probably more comedians present day than anybody.
What do you think, though, about the critique of David Letterman and why he was never number one was because he was too New York, too for smart. You know, they literally said that he had the smart crowd and Jay had the dumb crowd. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I don't. I think that Dave definitely was a broadcaster. Jay was a comic. I think Dave would put people on the show that didn't necessarily, well, I don't want to say necessarily, that wouldn't get ratings, that Dave was just curious about. He was really loyal to his friends, which I actually love, putting people on that necessarily wouldn't get ratings. And Jay, from what I've been told, was more of a corporate man trying to please his audience to get his bosses to get the highest ratings. So, you know, if he was best good friends with somebody, but they weren't, you know, necessarily get the ratings, for the most part, they wouldn't get booked. And it was all about those research, you know, this type of guest at this time. And Jay would go along with it, where Dave would, he would just put people on he was curious about. And to be number one, I don't know if you can go that route. Like, Johnny could get away with it a little bit more when the show was at 90 minutes because he didn't have as much competition. But when Dave was doing the show, there was just so much more competition, so many more choices, that to be number one and to have the bookings that he did, which I personally liked, and I'm sure you did, I think it would be a lot of trouble being number one.
Yeah, no, I definitely could see that that argument being made, and I like Jay Leno as a comedian. I think that's the stark difference between the two, and you pointed out really eloquently right there, is that Dave was the better broadcaster, Jay was the better comic, and I really enjoyed David Letterman's interview style way more than Jay Leno's. Sometimes I felt like Jay kind of, you know, wasn't all there in the interviews, but
it was not. Yeah, sorry, keep talking.
No, go ahead.
It was definitely, I think Jay would say it probably wasn't his strength. I mean, he was a comic. I think he shined in the monologue, where Dave did his opening remarks, very different style. Dave would do jokes. Jay would do more observational humor. And, you know, Jay would write that every single night with another writer. And he's definitely had help. But I mean, the monologue, I think definitely Jay's whole philosophy was the first, 35 minutes of the show were just comedy. That's why he explained apparently why he was number one, that he stacked the deck the first 35 minutes. People would stick with comedy, where Dave, I think, had the guest on earlier. That was Jay's philosophy. But I think they both did a great show. It was just very interesting to me that Jay, when he would go on Dave's show, I think he did the show 40 times on NBC, and he never would have gotten the Tonight Show. He never would have been even guest host if it wasn't for Dave. But he, once he took over the Tonight Show, he became a very different performer. And I get it. He probably had to be to play to middle America, to play across the board, to be broad. He had to change his sensibility of who he was as a comic. And it was very, very different. If you watch Jay's performances on Dave on the NBC show, and then you watched him host the Tonight Show, it was very, very different. But I get why he had to do it.
Well, yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, when you think about Jay on those early Letterman appearances, he was almost kind of the cutting edge comedian, kind of like the hip comedian that would come on there, and Dave loved having him. But when he went to the Tonight Show, he became broader. Would you say that was also a criticism of Conan not going broader when he went to the Tonight Show? Do you think that was his ultimate downfall with the ratings and NBC?
I think Conan needed more time. I don't think Jay necessarily succeeded wildly in 9 months. I think I think most people need at least 9 months. I'm not going to mention names, but I think a lot of the current talk show hosts, some of them took, I'll say Conan. I think Conan and Andy as performers probably took at least a year and a half or 2 years to find their voices at late night. But there's other people when they were in, they started in September of 93. There were plenty of other hosts that are on right now that took at least a year, 2 years, sometimes even more to find for the show to really gel. And I think Conan just needed more time. And I think he would have succeeded if he would have gotten that more time. I think that was an unfair criticism. But I apparently there were people at NBC that tried to give Conan notes to play more broad. And, you know, one person said, you know, Conan never took his notes. I don't know what those notes were, but I think when you're at 11:30 and you don't play broad and it is more challenging. I mean, I think that's why Fallon is succeeding wildly. It's crazy to me that my parents' friends are. I think it's great. I mean, he hits every demographic. You know, the college kids, 20s, 30s, 40s are into it, but like people, like senior citizens, love Fallon, which is wonderful. And I think you couldn't play more broad. I mean, to compare Jimmy Fallon to Johnny Carson, I see so many similarities from the sketches, from Fallon being in Carson's studio in 6B. You know, Fallon doesn't do a warm-up. You found out Johnny didn't do a warm-up, an audience warm-up before the show, so Fallon's like, I don't want to do it either. They play very, very broad. They make their guests look good. No mean-spirited humor. I think Lorne Michaels also said Fallon was the closest thing to this to Johnny Carson for the young generation. I think that's accurate.
Oh man, you know, when Fallon first came on, I thought he was firing on all cylinders from the first show. But he really got the hang of it and really did kind of assume that Carson role, which I thought had been missing in TV, especially with late night television since Carson left, because Jay was never the Carson kind of guy. Dave wasn't, even mm-hmm. Kimmel or Conan. None of them had that quality that Carson had that I think Fallon does possess.
I think I think all the other guys are immensely talented, and I watched them all. I think Jimmy just – there were two Saturday Night Live writers I talked to before Jimmy got the 12:35 gig. Fallon was didn't really hear much from him. There was a small period where he wasn't really showing up too much, and two Saturday Night Live writers told me that had worked with him. They both told me, Mark, nobody in America knows how talented this guy is, how talented Fallon is. Nobody. So they worked with him. They would see him just, writing. They would write with him and they'd be around him in the office, and they knew what he was capable of. And when it was announced that Fallon was going to take over for Conan, a lot of people in entertainment, just really smart people, thought it was the worst idea. I actually know somebody who ended up working on Fallon's 12:35 show that told me later that he originally thought it was a bad idea. And all of them were wrong, and all of them publicly, or at least privately to me, rather, say, yeah, we were all wrong. Like, I mean, it was – everyone was wrong. But based on two things, I thought Fallon – had a really good chance of succeeding. One, the SNL writers telling me no one knew how talented he was. And also because Lorne Michaels is right almost all the time. You know, Seth Meyers said something I always say, which I would never bet. And which was what? I will never bet against Lorne Michaels. I mean, his batting average, he's Ted Williams, higher in terms of a batting average than anyone. He's proven everyone wrong time and time again. Fallon is just doing a fantastic job. And I think, but again, I like all those guys, but I will say this, Fallon at his 12:30 show, I think it took a year and a half for him to find his voice. I mean, I think he was great from the start, but to really, for that show to gel and get a voice. I mean, listen, Carol Burnett, I think when I interviewed her, she told me her variety show, she thought it took like 7 years for the show to find their voice. So, I mean, for me to say a year and a half for Fallon is nothing. I mean, those shows really do take significant time normally to really figure that thing out. I mean, they're the hardest things, I think, to do successfully.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 1,000%. And you know, you mentioned a minute ago that you actually went to a Tonight Show taping when Jay did his series in New York. How was it going? Because I've never been, obviously. So okay. How is it in the Tonight Show, the whole way it shot, when Jay was doing the show, I guess?
That's an interesting question, because I have a very specific story to tell you. So we go to Studio 8H, which were where it was, and my friend Dan Brown and I sat in the second row on the aisle, and the main guest was Michael J. Fox, and there were some other guests, but there was a walk-on that we found out once the show started taping with Madonna. She did a walk-on because, you know, she had gone on Dave's show and did all the swearing that got – I mean, it was the biggest story in television and entertainment, Madonna going on Letterman and swearing. I mean, it was – and I don't know if people listening remember. I think they probably do. It was a huge thing. So she was going on Jay's show to do a walk-on to kind of – to me at least show this gentler side of her. And basically what happened – this is my biggest guess – they had to stall. Most of those shows, they tried to do the shows back then in real time. They would try to start at a time. But in my guesstimation, Madonna was running late because Jay comes out, which he normally does for the Tonight Show, and he takes questions from the audience. I remember one person asking Jay, can I sit at your desk? And Jay said, he threw up his arms. He's like, fine. So you have an audience member sitting at his desk. You have audience members asking for photos, and Jay, you know, always says yes. People, he's doing photos, answering questions, warming up the crowd. So then Jay is done with that, and apparently they were stalling for time, because then you had Jimmy Brogan getting up, and Jimmy Brogan did Carson a bunch as a stand-up. He's a very funny man, but he was also I think at one point maybe the head monologue writer for Jay. So he gets up and is taking questions from the audience and doing stand-up, and the next person that gets up, and this, I don't think this happened very often, but again, they were stalling for time. I couldn't tell as an audience member until later that I could realize, and I worked in TV myself for many years, so I could tell. The next person that got up was Ed Hall, and he is now taking all these questions from the audience, stalling time. So then finally, they start the show. Madonna does her walk on, and you had Michael J. Fox come out. And then once they started the show, yeah, it was pretty much done in real time. And then Jay was actually a guest that night on Conan's show down in 6B. So they did the sketch where Jay actually was saying goodnight to the audience, and was as part of Conan's start of his cold open. Jay was walking from Studio 8H down to 6A. So I remember right before the commercial, Jay getting on the mic and saying, I'm so sorry that I can't stick around. Thank you for coming. I would totally stick around and sign autographs. So I think he had a Tonight Show shirt that he quickly autographed and gave to somebody in the front row. But definitely that level of respect for the audience. He did that, and then he took off and they did the Conan thing. So, but you could just tell being in that audience that Jay – being closer to the audience and having that thrust stage and being right there as a stand-up comic, just there was just so much more energy. And they got rid of the curtain. That was the set where because previously he had the same curtain type thing that Johnny had, where the curtain would part, and he really made it his own, in my opinion.
Yeah, I totally 1,000% agree with you. And Jay Leno, to me, I think was supremely talented when he was hosting the Tonight Show.
Without a doubt.
Real quick, I want to get a couple more Carson questions in, sure. But I have to ask you, since you said I can name anybody, you tell me something you liked about him. What do you think about Stephen Colbert now at 11:35?
I love Stephen Colbert. I had a day job the first 3 years and 8 months that he was on the Colbert Report. And so I don't know if I'm biased or not, but he's the funniest, nicest man. I mean, he was just such an incredible guy to work with. But I mean, to remove myself from that, just as an admirer of him as a talent, I think he's just an amazing, amazing, funny, smart man. Then I think those shows take time to find one's footing and one's voice. And this is him doing this is so different from the Colbert Report, which was completely scripted. It was a half hour. And he really didn't – he would have famous celebrities on, but not really like this as much. It was – it was night and day. So I personally think he's doing a great job. And I think a year from now, probably even 6 months from now, I think what people are watching now, I think the show will just keep evolving and just getting stronger and stronger. And I think he's doing a great job. They did that Steve Martin cold open, I think last week, maybe the week before. The stuff that when I catch it, I think he's doing a great job, especially for only being on the air for a little bit. I'm not going to mention other hosts, but there are certain hosts that are doing this that took way, like I'd say at least a year. I mean, I mentioned this before, at least a year or two to figure it out. And I think he's going to, I think he's already figured it out. I just think the show's going to get stronger and stronger.
I think it's definitely going to build. I mean, I enjoyed his first night, and I definitely love the symbolism of Fallon appearing, you know, in that skit from the desk with Colbert. It was awesome. It was an awesome moment. Agreed. If you're a long-term fan of late night. So back to Carson. To me, I personally don't think that there's ever going to be anyone who can top Johnny because, you know, he kind of is the standard bearer of the medium. He, even though he took the Tonight Show over from two previous hosts, he kind of made the Tonight Show what it was. He didn't kind of, he did. He made the Tonight Show what it was and made the franchise, and he left a stamp that I just don't think, it's so high up there. You know, to me, it's almost like Sean Connery with James Bond, is that Daniel Craig does an awesome job. But he's not Sean Connery, you know, and it's not a knock to Daniel Craig. I'm just saying, like, Fallon is incredible. I love Fallon, but he's not Johnny. So to you, Johnny Carson had so many fantastic, memorable moments. You talk about when he just would interact with, you know, the regular people. I love the potato chip collector lady. You remember
of
that?
Course.
And then there was one where he was flirting with, I think, this 89-year-old who did Taekwondo or something like that. And it was just such a fantastic moment. What were some of your favorite Johnny Carson moments from the Tonight Show?
I know there's so many,
but if you can narrow it down to a couple.
I really liked when he was talking to the spell. It was like, wasn't it a spelling bee champion? It was a child from who I think he must have looked like 7 or 8, and he asked to go to Johnny's birthday party, or like he invited him to Disneyland for his birthday party. And, he was, Johnny was showing him how to do magic, and he's like, how do you really make it disappear? And Johnny said, how do you make it really – the money – it was money. It was coins. How do you make it really disappear? You get married. it was just – that I really like. I liked it when Carson – and this was very big at the time. He confronted Rickles across the hall in Studio 3 about the broken cigarette box while Rickles was taping CPO Sharky. I really liked that. Anytime Rickles was on, I really enjoyed it. The Burt Reynolds stuff was great. Bette Midler, amazing on the show. Especially on the what is it, May 21st, 92 with Bette Midler and Robin Williams. I mean, there were just so many incredible people that were on. I liked when Woody with Johnny dressed up like Willie Nelson, and him and Julio Iglesias did that song. You know, I was talking to one of the writers. They did a sketch I really liked. It was like a thesaurus salesman doing a eulogy doing a eulogy. It was like a funeral sketch, and I think the person that was deceased was a thesaurus salesman or something. So it was all like, synonyms for dying and that. I really like that sketch. I think Andrew Nichols had a hand in writing that. So yeah, there's just endless bits with Johnny. And it's funny because I was talking to a couple people about this. I don't even know if it was on my podcast or not, but you know, Dave Letterman probably influenced more comedy than anyone I could think of. Johnny, as a performer, he made more careers than anyone. He was probably better than anybody that's ever had a late night host. I mean, he was born to do this. In terms of him influencing people comedically, it's hard for me to see who those people would be. Because I've heard people talk about, of course, everyone loves Johnny and they have so much respect for him, but it was definitely different because I think Johnny didn't really invent a different type of comedy like Dave did. I don't want to say he was an innovator. I just want to say he was probably the best host overall, which was natural talent that he worked really, really hard to cultivate. And I've just never seen anybody make it look so effortless, because I've talked to these people that have had these shows, and it's not easy. And the amount of hours that it takes to make this thing work, it's amazing to me that Johnny could just basically show up to NBC Burbank and more or less wing it and just be as effortless and easy and so such a genius at his job. It's miraculous.
I mean, I think you're right, the best overall host. And to me, he had a wit kind of that was like no other. I just remember one time he said something. He said some sentence that was grammatically incorrect. And I think Dean Martin corrected it on him. He said, you know, you have a danging participle there. And Johnny just said, well, next time I'll wear a longer coat. And it was just like, you know, just the fact that he's so quick at that, I think, is what made him the better overall host. I know you got to get out of here, and I really appreciate your time. I want to ask one more question about the podcast. You've had so many amazing guests on. You know, some people who you know, were on The Tonight Show had personal interactions with Johnny. I mean, really pretty much everybody. Who's one person out there that you would love to have on the Carson podcast?
There are a bunch. I think like my wish list these days, like one or two, three people is Dave Letterman, Doc Severinsen. I think those are two people that I really want. Bette Midler. I mean, I have a long list. I mean, people have been so kind to sit down with me. One of my latest episodes, I think the latest one that was broadcast, Rick Ludwin, I think I've gotten more emails and messages and tweets about that episode than any episode I can think of. I mean,
that episode, I don't mean to interrupt you, but that episode was incredible. I think the best that you've done so far.
I give all credit to Rick Ludwin, and I really appreciate you saying that. But when I was doing the interview, I did get the sense that it was definitely up there as probably it felt like when I was recording that this might be the best thing episode that came out of the show. And, you know, it was almost 2 hours and the thing flew by. And again, it's, you know, I was talking to somebody recently that likes the podcast, and he was mentioning he really likes the episodes where the listener just learns a lot of new information. And he said, you know, I like the episodes too, where, you know, sometimes people tell the same stories and that's fascinating too. But Rick Ludwin, there was just so much that I don't think I knew and that the listeners necessarily that were into entertainment knew. And yeah, I actually emailed Mr. Ludwin saying I'm almost afraid to do another episode because this one was so good and everyone loved it. I'm like, how do I follow it? So all credit to Rick Ludwin on that one.
Amazing. Well, new episodes of the Carson Podcast are coming out. The Carson Podcast, carsonpodcast.com is where you can find out more information. And Mark, what's your Twitter?
My Twitter is mmalkoff.
Mmalkoff. Mark, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, it was nice talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, an excellent interview with the host of the Carson Podcast, Mark Malkoff. Some incredible stories, and I highly recommend his podcast. Like I said, I love it. You got to go check it out on iTunes.
Oh, man, it's really fantastic. I mean, you can literally just kind of like spin the wheel, make a deal, pick an episode, you know, and they're all really fantastic. Even the people whose names I don't even recognize, you know, like they're still quality interviews, and like you get to hear some amazing stories about the king of late night, Johnny Carson.
Yeah, one of the greatest live entertainers who ever lived.
Yeah, and I want to do a special plug. If you are here in Houston and really pretty much anywhere around the nation, you can still watch Johnny Carson. I watched Carson last night. I got a little digital rabbit ears, and it's actually a sister station of CW 39, which we have reality wrestling on.
Okay,
39.2 if you're here in Houston. And I watched Johnny Carson last night, and I mean, he's still the best. Like even Carson 30 years ago is still better than, I mean, anybody ever was. He really redefined the medium of late night TV, and you know, he's the watermark.
Yeah, and he's inspired so many of us. He's my idol. Mm-hmm. He's one of my idols. He's
mine.
One of your idols.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't be pursuing a full-time career in entertainment ourselves if it wasn't for the path that he blazed for so many of us. So, you know, it's incredible. You hear so many of the great comedians who have ever lived, from Robin Williams to Jerry Seinfeld, always talk about what it meant to make Johnny Carson laugh, and how good it made them feel to make Johnny laugh. That's the type of power that comes along very, very rarely.
And, you know, you always hear the story of, like, if he gave you the okay sign, you were a made man. If he invited you to the couch, it's over. You're booked for life. Your club rate just tripled.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was just, you know, he's always been one of those guys who's just,
he captures my imagination. And like I said, he was off the air, you know, before I was born.
Exactly.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah. I wasn't born for another 7 months. So big shout out to Mark Malkoff for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. Check out his podcast, CarsonPodcast.com. Shout out to Dave from the Carson Entertainment Group as well for putting me on the podcast.
There was my little throwback interview for you, brother. I hope you enjoyed it. And you know what? I mean, this was another Brad Gilmore show here where I'm still – guys, you know, it's weird. You know, when you do this show for so long, you start to figure out, where else can I go? And I think I figured it out. So this was just me kind of touching base with y'all again, keeping you updated on what's going on. Like I said, make sure you check out the Back to the Future, the podcast, Season 4. Season 4 is in the books. Season 5 is on the way. Probably 2018, early 2018, you're going to get Season 5. So a lot of cool stuff going on in the world of Brad Gilmore. We're live this Saturday, Reality of Wrestling from the World Gym Arena in Texas City. That's 10,000 M&F Lowry Expressway, Texas City, Texas. We're going to be doing another set of tapings for Fight TV. There's going to be a big cage match main event between Aiden Cristiano and Gino. Also, I got some big, big news, huge news coming here down the pipeline. Pipeline, why did I say that again? Pipeline, big news down the pipeline. Is it down the pike? Is that something? Is that a saying that I'm not aware of? I think it might be. Well, anyway, this has been the one and the only, the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. See you next time. Peace.
Oh, Brad, what have you done now?